Please listen carefully.
What is communication?
The act of taking a thought from my head and putting it into your head.
Essential behavior of life. We have the both blessing and responsibility of trying to foster
it. It's the strongest way for two people to convey information to each
other. What I have in my head to the outside world.
I think it's the ability to share your innermost feelings and thoughts with
Whatever
others.
Whatever it is that we do to express intent and achieve an impact.
Communication is the ability to express your needs, wants, frustrations, and desires to anyone that you feel needs to have that information.
Welcome to episode 42. I almost forgot what episode we were there and had a pause. Oh, man, that is a way the show gets off on a good foot. Episode 42 of Speech Science. I'm Matt Hott, joined down in Texas by Michelle Wintering.
Hello.
And out in Philadelphia, Michael McLeod.
What's up, Matt?
I am good. It is a good day. Today is June 18th when we're recording this, so it's going to be a couple days ago when you're listening to it in your car. My wife and I are celebrating seven years of wedding bliss today. And it is bronze is the traditional wedding gift for seven. So my wife and I went out and we searched long and hard to figure out what was the best thing to get for each other. And after discussing it, we bought a set of matching furnace and air conditioner units for our house.
That are is they the, bronze colored?
No, but there is bronze on the inside. So that's
perfect. See, you have checked the box on
checked
the 7-year anniversary.
The box. Well, no, last week we celebrated 7 years. We went down to Gatlinburg. And then today we also saw The Incredibles 2. Michael, to answer your question ahead of time, a 74 out of 100 on the Matt Hottometer.
That's pretty good.
It is. It's third highest movie of the summer for me.
What's top three right now?
Oh, yeah, I knew you were going to ask that. Avengers, Bad Samaritan, and The Incredibles.
Bad Samaritan? What is that?
Ooh, it's got David Tennant, and he plays a serial killer who is robbed by two low-level petty thieves. And they find out that he's got a woman tied up and ready to kill her in his house. And yeah, they have to save her. And they're the Bad Samaritans.
The Bad Samaritans.
Hence the title. It's a really good movie. I gave nothing away, to be honest. You find this all out in the first 5 minutes of the movie, 10 minutes of the movie. So I didn't give anything away about that movie.
I probably wouldn't see it anyway, but it's all right.
It's really good. It's a good character fight. But yeah, and I also got a cool pair of boots because when you're in Gatlinburg, you buy some boots.
Cowboy boots?
No, they are like hunting boots.
Oh, okay. I'm like cowboy hunting, hunting.
You yeah, they're there. Like a hunting boot. They're like waterproof and hiking combined. How about y'all? Michelle, let's start with you. Anything exciting going on with you down in Texas?
Well, I wrapped up, I'm still doing some paperwork, but wrapped up my job for maternity leave and have handed off all of my patients. So that's been a little crazy. And on that note, I'm 39 weeks pregnant and we are ready to have a baby.
Baby so, speech science.
Baby speech science can come anytime. That would be great.
Aww. Yeah. That's awesome. And Michael, what's going on with you out in Philly?
I can't possibly follow that up. That was nothing in my life compares to what you just said.
So, Mike, I have a question for you.
What's up?
Which Philly cheesesteak do you support?
Out of the two?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say Jim's, I would say.
Is Jim's the one with the cheese whiz?
They all have cheese whiz.
Okay, is it? Okay.
Yeah. I support New York.
I
support
right next to each other. The two.
I honestly don't even know, to be honest with you.
What?
I support the New York cheesesteaks. That's what I support.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm transplanted into Philadelphia.
I figured, but I didn't know if you had acclimated yet to their food choices. If you had done Anthony Bourdain and went for local culinary delights.
I love Wawa. There's no Wawa in New York. I love Wawa.
That's the gas station, right?
It's like a really, really nice 7-Eleven.
Oh, well, we have one of those, like I forget what it's called, Shenanigans or something like that out in New Concord, Ohio. But not Wawa, so I feel you there. Also, Mike, when you're out in Philly, does like Boys to Men just randomly play?
In my head, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And Fresh Prince, right?
Of course, of course.
No, he's out in Bel Air. He couldn't make it in Philly because his mama got scared.
He started in West Philly.
But his mom got scared.
They just painted a huge mural to him in West Philly.
Did they really?
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Why did they do that?
Why not?
Because he's the man.
Well, I'm looking this up.
He saved the world many times.
Wow.
Yeah,
you are not kidding. That is... Okay, so we'll have a link on this to the Facebook page. This is a... 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5-story building with a Will Smith. I'm sorry, something just played. With Will Smith sitting on a chair, and there are vines growing around the chair. Yeah. It is.
I told you.
Wow. That is impressive.
Well, murals, aren't there murals all over Philly?
Yes, there are. There's one right outside of my window.
Oh, what do you get to see outside your window, Mike?
It's like a girl reading a book.
Not
bad. That's about it. Okay. Yeah. It's all right. I'll post a picture in the show notes.
Sounds good.
You're like, I wish. Oh, I'm. Which one is it? Is it the little girl with the book on her lap or the girl like laying down with the book under her crossed arms?
See, what I want to know is what did you just Google? What did you just type in Google to find that?
Girl reading book, mural, Philadelphia.
Wow, Matt.
That was okay, let me see. Girl reading.
Can't you look at your window?
Yeah, but I want to know which what two you're looking at.
Yeah.
Which two you're looking at. It's coming. Let's see. Like if you go to Google, if you type that in Google, it's the third one.
So she's got like the books under her arm?
Yes.
That is really cool. That's a cool little street art.
Yep.
I am upset. I want street art in my suburb.
Sure we have now told everyone where Mike lives.
Well, from your window. Cool. From your window. That's like.
Come find me.
You can
come find him.
You can probably see that from all over the place.
Yeah.
It's like attached to a parking lot. So it's.
Yeah. It's pretty normal.
Yeah, it's nice.
Anywho's. We've already gotten off on the right foot or the wrong
foot.
We're
doing great, guys.
We're doing well. We want to hear from you, though. So we want to know what murals you've got outside your window, what Philadelphia places you or what Philly steak places you enjoy, if you would name the baby speech science or other random things, appliances you've bought for your marriage bliss, head over to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. From there, you can email us, contact@speechscience.org, or give us a phone call. 503-345-6740. And also on there, it's got a backlog of all 41 other episodes, including last week's highly involved rapid prompting method debate, debacle?
Discussion, discussion, yeah.
Episode 41, that's on up there. Also, you can see what's hashtagging at hashtag speech science. It looks like right now there's a discussion on STEM. What is that? Science, engineering, math, technology. So there's a hashtag of STEM going along with speech science right now. You can see that over on our website. Coming up today, we're going to talk about new research, quote unquote, for a theory called brain balance. Is your brain in balance and does it link to possible improvement in kids with autism? Probably not. Moving also, the Hawaii is in trouble for telling parents that they have to have their kids out of special education by the age of 20. And also, what do you do when a student or a parent is placed in a situation or a home that you do not want them in? You are listening to Speech Science.
Are you recruiting for a new job? Then head over to our sponsors page, www.speechscience.org/sponsors, and click on ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter enables companies to post to all the major free job boards with a single submission and vet all applicants through simple-to-set-up online question and answer. The Q&A spares hiring managers from reading unqualified candidates' resumes through vetting questions. At the same time, ZipRecruiter lets them easily access huge talent pools, rivaling even the largest paid job sites. This service allows the hiring personnel to quickly explore applicants' answers and resumes online while they collaborate with each other to rate and select the best candidates. Plans can be customized to meet the needs of any individual or company and offers a suite of features designed to make hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. That's ZipRecruiter. Head over to our website, www.speechscience.org/sponsors, and click on the ZipRecruiter page.
This is Dr. Keith Wolgemuth from the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Loma Linda University, saying that you're listening to a SpeechScience.org podcast.
Welcome back to Speech Science, episode 42. Matt Hott here alongside Michelle Wintering and Michael McLeod. In the break, we've realized that we all have no idea about the food in our own hometowns.
Especially Mike. It's not my hometown.
You're a transplant there.
That's right.
I give you that.
Okay,
that's
so my question is...
Geno's. There's our two Philly steak places across the street from each other in Philly.
So my question is, how long do you have to live somewhere before you are an official hometown person?
Hometown is where you grew up.
Okay, but like...
You know, yeah, I agree with that.
But like, okay, but if you live somewhere like for 40 years, is that now your hometown?
It's your kid's hometown.
Okay, fair enough.
You know what I mean?
No, that's why I was wondering, because like...
Well, I mean, I will say though, Matt, being military, we have to make a place home pretty quick. So
exactly. See? So you guys are like on the two-day plan. I'm like on the 40-year plan.
It takes me about a year to feel like a place is home.
Michael's on the never going to change my hometown. So Mike...
No.
Well, what? My hometown is still my hometown. That doesn't change.
I agree with Mike. That's true. Mike, what part of New York are you from?
I grew up in Long Island.
Oh, I just read something. Here's your random fact. And I feel like as speech therapists, you have to be like knowledgeable about everything to be an effective therapist, right?
We have to be generalists. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just read today that I'm pulling this up as we talk because I don't want to get it wrong, but and I can't find it. Well, the city of New York today, or this weekend, continued their treaty with one of the Native American tribes in the area and delivered like 100 bushels of salt for like Long Island. So there you go. Yeah.
Your hometown's in the news, Mike.
Look at that. See?
And I thought it was so weird. They're like, New York delivers their bushels of salt for the year. And I was like, that's a little odd. So there you go. Moving from one odd thing to the next. I have no transition for that, so I apologize.
Yeah.
Over at NPR, quote-unquote, the cutting-edge program for children with autism and ADHD rests on a razor-thin evidence. That's from Heard on All Things Considered and Chris Benderev. But this is another anomaly, another de facto pop therapy called Brain Balance, where they look at trying to get your children with autism or ADHD or a couple other disorders to use the other side of their brain to help improve their skills. Fact, fiction, another snake oil salesman? What are we thinking?
Matt, well, I feel like your tone of voice is kind of giving away your opinion.
I'm trying to sound all upbeat, okay? I had a week off. I'm trying to sound upbeat, but yes, I you probably know where I'm going with this. But what do y'all think?
So last week we had the whole rapid prompting debate, and now here we are on Brain Balance. So we're just really, really mowing along here.
Well, Brain Balance says that they believe, where is this? Let's see. I pulled this up. It's a non-medical and drug-free program that helps children who struggle with ADHD, autism spectrum, and learning and processing disorders. The company says it addresses a child's challenges with a combination of physical exercises, nutritional guidance, and academic training. The NPR article actually goes into great detail to explain that the academic training is something very similar to what you would see with like a academic tutor or anything else that, you know, you want to give your kid that extra boost for. The nutritional guidance, you know, avoiding gluten and sugars, and the physical part ranges everything from a sensory modality input scale to balance beams and blocking off part of their eyes.
Interesting.
So basically it seems like when a parent brings their child in, one of the first things they do is this very extensive baseline testing to find out what areas of the brain are weaker. And from this article, it seems like they say either it's the right side's weak or the left side's weak or the frontal lobe is weak. And then they put together what you just said, Matt, which is the physical, the nutrition, and what was the other one?
Academic,
which is just basic tutoring. And when you see the video of the physical, it's, you know, kids wearing these, you know, wearing these glasses that are hiding one side of their face. They're wearing a buzzer on their arm. They're wearing like headphones to activate one area of the brain. And it's, you know, it's really, really, really interesting. It's, you know, I think the article summed it up really well when they interviewed some actual doctors and asked them their opinions on it. And the one guy was just like, yeah, this just simply does not make any sense, you know, because pretty much, and we know as speech pathologists, you know, every activity that we do, you know, both hemispheres of the brain are active. You know, it's not a matter of one side's weaker than the other. And this is almost just like exercise for one lobe. So, you know, he's saying, you know, it's a very simple hypothesis that science simply does not back up at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that really stood out to me is you're talking a very high monetary cost in this sort of program for families, that in the first, they said the first 6 months, families can easily spend $10,000. And that's for one sort of cycle of it. And I think, I don't know, that concerns me, because if you go back to psychology research, I'd have to find it, but we're often more apt to rate something as positive when there's no return policy and there's no, like, we've spent a lot of money on it, right?
Really?
Yeah, there's research that shows that. Like, I go shopping for a dress. If I can't return it, I'm going to rate it myself as being more satisfied with it later. And so when they mention that family satisfaction rates for this program, from the survey NPR did, what they pulled up was 8.5 out of 10. So parents are actually rating it pretty high. But are they really seeing differences, or is this confirmation bias?
Yeah, and in the one efficacy research thing they did for Brain Balance, the owner of Brain Balance was the author of the study. So, you know, obviously you have a conflict of interest there, and he's, you know, monetarily interested in it. So this is a pretty, you know, you go along the lines, you know, he claims to have these doctorates and these master's degrees. Then you learn that they're from not exactly the right, you know, universities, all that. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And that's the hard part when your only research is coming from, again, the paid wall that you have to pay into. And I read that the article makes mention that they brought in $50 million. $50 million. I have a hard time anytime that there is a therapy or a trend that is monetarily motivating for the people that use it. We go into speech therapy and other therapies not to make tons of money. Like, right? Or, I mean, we're not millionaires. We're not living in the McMansions of the world. But, you know, we still help people. When your idea is that, like, when your website, which is on the brainbalancecenters.com, you can get a franchise in your area. And that automatically gives me a weird red flag towards everything.
Yeah. I was reading the article thinking, hey, you know, there seemed to be, when I first started reading it, there seemed to be things, pieces of this that could be helpful.
Right.
Right. Just like there's pieces of a lot of things that could be helpful. The money piece is what started to throw me off. And then they talked about the credentials for the creator as well. It sounds like NPR also investigated a little further because they say he has these multiple neuroscience degrees. But then if you look at where they're from, you have to do some digging to figure that out. And they're not accredited and they're not, I don't know. It just seems like it's being misrepresented.
Well, I did like at the end. Oh, sorry, Mike. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say it really bothers me that, you know, the people behind Brain Balance, you know, they're claiming like a full recovery from these disorders. Yeah. You know, they're saying like, oh, you'll cure autism. You'll cure ADHD. No, that's insanity. You know, if this was true and there was true research efficacy behind it, you know, that would be in medical journals everywhere. This would be huge news. But parents are still going because when they get this diagnosis, they're desperate, they're upset, they're, you know, it's traumatic. And they go and they're spending, you know, like this one family went into their retirement savings to pay for this. So it's a shame that things like this are able to exist.
And there's so many horror stories when you look at the other side that drives parents or families to a situation like this. You know, you've seen the kids that were on the wrong dosage of medication for ADHD, or maybe they didn't even have ADHD and someone put them on the medication, and you hear the, my son became a zombie when you put him on the medication. And as a parent, I look at my two boys. I have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old. And if you were to tell me that I could, you know, there was a medication that might make them better, but the side effect makes them a zombie and it kills their personality, I could see as a parent why you wouldn't be wholeheartedly going towards that. But unfortunately, a lot of those horror stories are not, I guess not unfortunately, fortunately, those horror stories are not always 100% true. It's more the misdiagnosis or the wrong dosage, because these are little dudes and dudettes, little boys and girls, that it's hard sometimes to get the right balance of medication into their brain, at least the first time, until you can say, okay, no, this really made him zombie-like, or no, this didn't affect her at all. You learn to, what is it, titrate the system with the medication over time?
Yeah, I think you're right, but...
You know, I don't know. I can see how a parent gets to it, but it's ultimately scary for those of us in the position that work with them. And I know, Michael, you've got a clinic. This kind of almost goes right towards against what you do, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. And I've worked with families and, you know, teenagers who have been to these Brain Balance places.
Oh, really?
And yes. Yeah. There's one somewhere around here. And, you know, the kids say they enjoy it. They like it. You know, it's fun wearing the stuff and doing the activities. You know, they're too young to truly recognize what they're going through, what the purpose is and what's happening and how much money is being spent. But also a lot of the time when a kid goes to a therapy or goes to a place and has positive things to say about it, you know, a lot of times parents will take it away as, oh, it was beneficial, it was helpful. But maybe the kid just had fun wearing that stuff and doing the activities. But was it actually helping them or curing them of something like they claim? Absolutely not.
You know, it would be kind of fun to walk a balance beam with half your vision cut. I mean, and I do truly mean that. It would be kind of interesting, kind of fun to see what it would do, but I don't see the therapy side of that.
Mm-hmm.
What I do like in the NPR article is that they follow a family, and at the end they say that by the end of their older son's second 3-month session at the Brain Balance, so another $10,000 to $15,000, they stopped believing that vibrating armbands and spinning in a swivel chair would translate to social skill success. So there you go. We want to hear from you, though. Head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org, or email us, contact@speechscience, or phone call 503-345-6740.
Hey guys, I'm sure any of you listening here either have kids, work with kids, were one at one point of time. So you guys know, for art supplies, there's basically only one brand, Crayola. Everything else is just second tier. Crayola Online offers a huge range of Crayola brand name items, including crayons, markers, Silly Putty, Color Wonder, Creative Makers, and even Crayola Custom 64 boxes. Crayola's offering a deal for Speed Science listeners. Go to speedscience.org/sponsors, click on the Crayola box. Crayola will give you 10% off your purchase. To start saving, go to speedscience.org/sponsors and get started today.
Changing gears just a little bit, or I guess changing oceans or sides or whatever it is. Out in Hawaii, I don't know. I don't have transitions today, guys. I've been in Gatlinburg. I've been on top of a mountain. I don't have transitions from terrible balance of brains to Hawaii. But Hawaii,
I'm loving your transition, Matt. This is great.
Hawaii is settling for $10 million with their families because they were not following the Individuals with Disability Education Act, IDEA. They were basically telling parents that at the age of 20, their kids aged out of education. And IDEA says they get to stay in until they turn 22.
So I just read the article before we got on, Matt, but yes. Can you remind me? Was this in a certain school district or was this a statewide issue?
So I thought they were just talking about in Honolulu. $10 million, it affected 495 students that were part of the class action lawsuit. So
okay.
I don't know if there was an individual city, but I do know that from working in the schools, we have this discussion almost every year, that a parent has the opportunity to either have their student graduate or basically stay in the school and they hold their diploma until the student turns 22. So if the kid turns 22 in September 3rd, 22 on December 31st, January 2nd, or June 8th, they can stay in school until their 22nd birthday, and then they are no longer eligible for state services provided by the school district. I know in my school district, and we just had it this year, where the kids would graduate during their, or I should put in quotes, graduate during their senior year. After their senior year, they graduate, but the school holds the diploma till they turn 22, and then they go into the older group classrooms where they work on job skills or those soft skills for a job.
Yeah, that was similar to when I worked at the School for the Deaf and the Blind in Colorado. They had a really neat transition program for, you know, kids through age 21, where they would walk for graduation but not actually receive their diploma, and they'd go into a Bridges program to help them transition. But I feel like it's pretty straightforward with the article that this is a little crazy. You can't tell families that their kid has to leave school at age 20 when they're good for another year plus.
Yeah, working with a lot of teenagers out here, you know, these transition services post-grad high school are huge. You know, like, you know, working, you know, growing up within your hometown, like we were talking about, you know, you have, you know, you're there from K to 12 and you're in such a structured environment within your hometown. And then transitioning from there to a college, to employment, to something, and ensuring that that child with the IEP, you know, has the right accommodations in place moving forward. You know, maybe there were very specific accommodations that worked in middle school and high school. And it's important to make sure that those could continue. And, you know, the high school is in touch with the special needs department at the college or wherever the student's going.
Yep.
This is really, you know, this is just another one of those little tidbits that's within the IDEA that many people just don't seem to know about.
Well, and my question is, and then Michelle, I'm sorry, I cut you off, but my question is who else on the team of all these kids failed them? Because it's not just a principal saying, okay, in this building, we're going to kick all the kids out at 20. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're not going to tell them. This is a failure on every single member sitting at that table, parent included, because And I know I sound like a heartless person when I say that, but at every meeting, we hand a parent a copy of the IDEA. We say, hey, do you want to read this? And then there's always that wink and a nudge, like the parent's like, ah, I've gotten these all since sixth grade. I tell every therapist that I talk to and every teacher that, like, it is our job to know what's in this IDEA book. I get laughed at when I say we have to know the operating standards and the guidance here in Ohio from ODE, that we need to know these things front and back, because a lot of times as speech therapists, we're the only ones that are on the side of this parent. I mean, not that the teachers and the administration is not, but it's very easy for us as school-based SLPs, or at least this is my view on this. So, you know, hate mail at matt@speechscience.org. But like, it's very easy for me to say, hey, I think the parent needs to know this, because I don't really care about how the testing is going in the math department. I don't really care that the kid needs an extra 30 minutes to write up his report, because I'm not hooked into their grades. I am more concerned about them developing the skill. So my question is where were all these other people? We're looking at kids that are maybe in the multiple disability classroom or the multiple handicap classrooms that are usually affected the most by these 20 to 22 year old age ranges. And you've got a whole interdisciplinary team. You've got OTs, PTs, speechies, work coordinators, teachers, principals. There's a failure happening in Hawaii that's not just one principal. It's an entire team failure.
Exactly. And you know this entire team was at the IEP meetings and nobody was speaking up. Nobody was saying anything. You know, I completely agree with everything you just said, Matt. You know, these IEPs that we have meetings for, that have our names on them, that we sign, you know, these are federally mandated documents, federal documents. These are not just some thing that just gets printed out and put on the table. You know, this is something that we are federally mandated to follow through on these goals. And goals need to be written in a very specific way and measured in a very specific way. And there's certain, you know, tenets to this IDEA, which is a very big deal that, you know, that a lot of therapists don't know about, don't take the time to learn about. And it's also, like we've said before, at the collegiate level, not focused on barely enough.
Then, yeah, I wish I could read more, because it is a short article, but yeah. I kind of want to, after this podcast, I want to read it. I'm really curious about the court case. I want to know what red flagged this, what parent said, wait a second, this isn't right. And that's a lot of, this isn't one family. This is a lot of families who sat in, just like you said, Mike, sat in IEP meetings and were told their kid was aging out, and they're not.
Yeah, and it's so strange to me, because like working, and I'm trying to Google more about this as we talk, like working in the school district, like I did a tour of duty in the preschool. And if you know me, that was one year that I love the kids. I love the teachers. I linked one of those teachers things on our Facebook page, but oh man, I can't do preschool. But even at the preschool level and the kindergarten level, we were telling parents like, hey, you have, you know, because there's a part on the IED, at least here in Ohio, the part on the IEP where we have to say their expected graduation date. Mm-hmm. And you know, the parents are like, oh my gosh, that's only 12 years from now, which to a parent with a kid with multiple handicaps, that's very scary when you think I've only got 12. And we're always like, no. That's the year that we have to put, because that's the year they would graduate with their peers, but they can stay in till they turn 22. So this isn't even just the high school thing. This is every grade beforehand that they didn't, no one told these parents.
Yeah.
Sorry, I get.
And then some. Upset. I wish I could know the backstory of how it came to the court case. You know,
that's what I'm trying to find out.
Well, Hawaii had to pay $10 million. So this is, yeah. You know, I think that's I think this is kind of showing how big of a deal this is.
Yeah, that's true. But that doesn't even seem like a lot because it said each family only receives $20,000.
And they got that specifically to reimburse private services that they had paid for.
Right.
Look at the article. Yeah.
I got a new one that I'll link to into the show notes. And I'm going to send it over to you guys right now. It is from Education Weekly. Let's see, 495 students, $8.8 million. So it's not even 10 million. Let's see. Nope. Doesn't even say. It says the checks will be given directly to the providers of the service. So it's not even to the parents. So there you go.
Yeah, the first article said that too.
Yeah.
At the end.
Oh, I thought I could find more. I couldn't.
So it sounds like the settlement was really just to cover missed services.
Which is such a... I hate districts sometimes. I'd take a job in Hawaii, but like, I don't know. After something like this, I don't know if I would... I don't know.
Yeah, because it's missing... You're missing more than pullouts for speech, OT, and PT.
Yeah.
You're missing the social language and everything else of being in school and... all that, but
are you fighting the good fight at your district? We want to hear from you. Go over to podcast.speechscience.org, email us contact@speechscience.org, or give us a phone call 503-345-6740. Or if you're a tweeter, not a talker, hashtag us at #speechscience. Once again, kind of moving from that, Mike, I loved how you were talking about transition goals. But there is an article from the Canberra Times. This is out in Australia. And again, we'll have this linked in our show notes. And it talks about a lady goes to something like a state facility or, you know, something like that in 2012. And she lives in a locked dementia ward. And she gets to briefly leave her bed and enjoy a cup of tea once or twice a day. And I bring this up because... we talked about transition services, and I know here in Ohio it's a big deal that if you
I was going to cut that out, but now I will leave that in.
Yeah, leave it in high
school. But like, for real though, like this lady's 56 years old. She's in a dementia ward. We have I go and see home health care where sometimes I'm the only one that's working with this adult that brings them any news of the outside. We've got teenagers, 20 year old or 30 year old kids living in nursing homes because they're the only ones that are able to take care of all their needs. What are we to do, you know, planning to help these parents or family members?
I mean, I think Mike mentioned it earlier, and the programs that are so important for us to be thinking about, especially for working with high school students, are the transition programs. And like I mentioned to you, I was fortunate to work somewhere that had a Bridges program to prep kids for either the workforce or possibly college, get them some job experience. And before I went to grad school, I worked as a job coach for Goodwill Industries. So those are the kind of places you have to seek them out though. It's not always readily available depending where you live, especially rural. Gosh, I mean, I don't know Australia, what's available there. Because in the States, I know we're missing. We have holes of that. Well, where we don't have necessarily the transition programs available for kids as soon as they're done with high school.
I know there was, when I worked up in the Dayton area, there was an 8 or 10 year waiting list for like sheltered home living facilities, you know, where there's like somebody kind of monitoring where they would be.
Like a group home.
Yeah, thank you. A group home. And if you've got a parent that dies, because, you know, we're talking about 30-year-old adults that need the assistance of their 60 or 70-year-old parents, and then the parent passes away, you've now got 10 years in some areas where that young adult doesn't have anyone to care for them. They're going to end up at a nursing home.
Yeah, and unless they have a sibling who's able to step in or another relative, you could have kids in really tough situations. You know, I think in a previous podcast, we talked about housing at the end of life for Alzheimer's and making it more home-like and all that sort of thing instead of a traditional nursing home. And maybe we need to be, this is way bigger than I can do, but maybe thinking about what are the options for those severe cases where kids are multiple disabilities and really need 24-hour support. And then what about the kids who don't need that 24-hour support, but they need somewhere in the middle. You know, they're not necessarily going to be the independent employment, independent housing kid, but they need something in the middle.
And even for adults, it gets expensive too. Like, I'm even thinking for my, like, my end of life adults, you know, you have a limited amount of funding. So you put them in the best place you can. And sometimes it ends up looking like a very cramped college dorm style apartment building where you've got 500 adults all with a lot of needs with one nurse on the floor and one aide trying to change them. And all they're doing is going from room to room. You know,
we got some heavy topics here.
Seriously.
No, we want to hear from you though. We do want to hear from you. Head to our website, podcast.speechscience.org. Email us, contact@speechscience.org, or phone call 503-345-6740. You guys want a lighter topic?
That'd be nice. Yeah.
All right. In honor of, where'd I put this? Hold on, I've got to find the lighter topic. In order, or in honor of Baby Speech Science, who is due moments from now? Is that the fingers crossed, Michelle?
Yeah,
yeah.
He can come anytime. That would be great.
This is coming from the Scary Mommy blog. I love Scary Mommy. It's also part of the No Idea What I'm Doing Daddy blog. They kind of overlap sometimes. Is the top things we should be really talking to our kids. This is how we should be talking to our kids. And I'll kind of read them, and you guys tell me from a therapist point of view if it is on point or what we can do or maybe how to expand that. Number one, don't talk down to kids. Talking to children in a weird voice or talking down to them is like your racist aunt talking louder to someone who doesn't speak her language.
I think I like the Scary Mommy page because of the humor. I mean, that's a simple one. If you're going to work with kids, we've all experienced that. And I think one of their topics is talking to them at their level, right? Like, I'm jumping ahead of you, Matt, but I think it's essential to get at their eye level and talk to a kid.
You could pretty much change the title of this article to "Tips Your Clinic Supervisor Gives You in EI Clinic in Grad School." It's the same thing.
I was gonna say these are the tips I got when I was working in my preschool the one year.
There you go,
Michelle. You're right. Number two, get down on their level, make eye contact. Number three, this is always a fun one at the high school level. Ask kids what they want to be called. Michael, Michelle, how many times have you guys gotten a kid where you're like, Brian Pillman, can you come in here? And they're like, I go by Bill. You're like, all right, Bill, let's go.
All right, Bill it is. Yeah, and I think when they're really little, that means asking their parents too. What, you know, how many kids have I evaluated who I start the eval and it's 5 minutes in before the parent tells me that they go by their middle name? I'm like, well, that might explain why they're not responding to things at the moment. But it's a good reminder for me to make sure that with the young kids, I'm asking the parents what does the kid prefer to be called? What do you call him on a daily basis? And like you said, Matt, with the older kids, we all get annoyed if somebody messes up our name, even if we don't correct them. Everybody internally kind of goes, yeah. When someone messes up your name.
Well, and they even mentioned in this about making sure you use the right gender pronoun, which is super important at the high school level when kids are cross-gendering, but transitioning, crossing over was the other thing my brain was going. But no, I find it interesting. But today, my son, we went to the dentist and I was filling out paperwork and it said a nickname or what do they want to be called at the top. It was right after their legal name and it said nickname or preferred name. And I was like, huh, that's pretty cool.
That is nice.
Yeah. And the article also touches on just like using like vague words like kid. Like I fall into that a lot of the time, like calling like a teenager a kid, like, oh, I work with kids. But like I'll be working like me as a 31-year-old, like I consider like a 21-year-old to be a kid. I mean, they're kids, you know. So it's like, but I'm working with like a 16-17-year-old, and I'll be using the phrase kid, and that could be kind of insulting to them.
That is true. My social skills group, though, I always try to find the way to insult them the most. So
you're testing it.
Well, it's funny. Like I teach a class, right? You know, I taught a class twice a week, and I would purposely try to model sarcasm or good-natured ribbing to kind of show them like the difference between when someone likes you and is kidding versus when someone doesn't like you. So, you know, they'd always ask me a question and I'd be like, why don't you do this? And I'm like, because I don't like kids. And they're like, oh, Mr. Hot. Number four, be goofy. Kids are funny, so you should be funny with them.
This Absolutely. One, I loved this one where they said, embrace the random shit they say. because, they, I mean, it's true. I think of all the kids I've worked with and one kid who I really enjoyed working with in my most recent job here, he would start kind of acting something out. And so we started using the phrase, I'm pretending. Like, tell us.
Yeah, I like that.
What are you pretending? So that he could, and we would just engage with it. Instead of trying to get rid of him acting it out, how can we use that as a social cue for him to interact with his peers? And had some success with that. But yeah, be goofy. Like, okay, he says we're on a boat in the middle of, all right, let's do that for 2 minutes. So we can imagine we're on a boat in the middle of the ocean catching giant sharks.
Improv. That's what it is. Always say yes. Number five, be relatable, even vulnerable. This is something I do with my social skills classroom and kids all the time, is that, you know, if they express being terrified or sad, you let them know they're not alone. I had to go through that with my kid today about being in the dentist. I'm like, yeah, I hate the dentist too, but buddy, we're going to get through this. Or when my kids are like, I don't want to fail a test. I'm like, I don't want to fail a test either. But you get through with them. Michael, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And you always, always validate their feelings. You know, it could be like, oh, I'm scared over, you know, something totally irrational and silly, but you always, you know, recognize that, you know, that you hear them, that you understand they feel that way and you validate it. You know, that's a really strong thing, you know, especially in terms of building rapport and building that relationship and, you know, expressing the true power of communication for them to express a feeling and for you to not only recognize it, but shift your focus to them and their feeling. That's a big thing for a kid to have an adult do that for them.
Mm-hmm. I had a mentor who said to me, and it always kind of stuck with me, was that especially with middle and high school students, right? To never say to the kid, right? I'm saying kid again. term, but to the young adults or the middle schooler, that never to say, oh, this won't matter. When you look back, never telling them that this doesn't matter, because in that moment, in their reality, in their perspective on the world, that's the biggest thing in the world. So for us to dismiss it and say, this isn't going to matter when you're 15, this isn't going to matter when you're in college, this isn't going to matter. You're worried about something that isn't important, because right then we need to acknowledge it. And it may really be something that isn't going to matter in 2 days, but like,
but it matters to them in that moment. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I laugh because I, like, as you were talking, I was thinking about how my kids were not my kids, but my students were getting nervous about who they were going to ask for prom. And like, I told them a story about how I got shut down for my first prom, and they laughed. And I think it was that it wasn't like they were laughing at me. It was that weird, relaxed, nervous laugh where you're like, oh, that is my worst fear. And someone managed to make it through it. It was, you know, I felt terrible afterwards. I was like, oh, guys, thanks. I feel so like self-conscious now. But, and my favorite one on the list is the one that I have the hardest time to do with my own kids, which is play. And if you see the video with my office, it is a quote unquote Jurassic Park level disaster zone, as my son has made different paddocks in my office. But, you know, even me sitting here and while he plays, we get to talk more than anything else.
Yeah. This really goes really perfectly hand in hand to my personal favorite, which is the DIR floor tie model, which I use a lot in my clinic. And that really discusses, you know, the power of play. You know, that's, you're seeing this more and more, you know, as play in the home setting decreases because of the strength of electronics, you know, the true power of play, the true power of, you know, trial and error and learning through experience. It's one of the most beneficial things for a kid. You know, you see the certain schools that are seeing the benefits of doubling recess time and tripling recess time. You know, this is where kids learn. They learn through experience with their peers, with their, you know, with, you know, the kids that they already have a relationship with, you know, playing with them, trying new things, failing, trying again, and learning from their own experiences.
What is DIR floor time? I'm sorry, Michelle.
I was going to ask that too, because I know like this much about it. So tell us. Like,
it's the Stanley Greenspan created the approach. It's pretty much, in many ways, one of the simplest ways to describe it is it's kind of the opposite of ABA. You know, it's really you get on the child's level and you meet them where they're at, and you pretty much go into their world and follow their lead.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's very, very relationship based. It's all based on interpersonal relationships.
Very cool.
Yep.
Yeah, you mentioned the rise of technology, and that is something my wife and I struggle with all the time with our two kids, where, you know, the pool of technology is so strong that, you know, my oldest one wants it all the time, the youngest one wants it all the time, but at the same time, I find it interesting that today his big game, my oldest one's big toy is, or big activity is, the Jurassic World battle on his iPad. But then when we take it away, it's like where the dinosaurs fight each other. But when we take it away from him, like, he only gets so much time, he'll continue the fights with his own dinosaurs on the floor. But now he becomes the announcer. And from the speech therapy side, I'm always like, oh, wow, these are some great, great language skills, because like he'll announce them almost like a WWE wrestling match. Where he's like, the Indominus Raptor, or the Indoraptor, weighing in, and he's just at 1 ton and standing at 82 feet against the T-Rex at 12 feet. And you're like, you know what? You don't understand, but you do. So I'm going to take that as an awesome moment.
I like it.
Oh, that's a good one to end on, right?
Yeah, well, I think that's a good one. Plus, we were going to talk about the...
after the break.
When you're at... Okay, sweet.
We want to hear from you, though. Head over to our website, podcast.speedscience.org. From there, email us, contact@speedscience.org, or phone calls, 503-345-6740. On the other side of the break, we're going to wrap this thing up and celebrate Britain's Got Talent. I know, we're in America, but every now and then they do one thing right. You're listening to Speed Science.
I've got to tell you that shopping for scrubs is not one of my favorite things. You want me to tell you why? I go to stores, one store, another store, another store, looking for my size, and guess what? It's not there. Or they have the wrong color, or they only have it in women's sizes. So I got a solution for you. Scrubs & Beyond is on the go with a brand name that's growing fast. Healthcare professionals know and trust Scrubs & Beyond. Scrubs & Beyond offers a new kind of shopping experience for the healthcare professional who is searching for an ever-expanding collection of exclusives and an extensive selection of name-brand medical uniforms and accessories at a great price. Scrubs & Beyond is offering free shipping, wow, I can't believe that, for Speech Science listeners. Head over to speechscience.org/sponsors and click on Scrubs & Beyond to begin your order today.
Coming soon to the Speech Science Network, we have a brand new podcast called Talking with Tech, in which we will discover all the different ways that technology can enrich the lives of not only those who experience disabilities, but everyone else that's using technology already. Technology makes things possible for others, and it makes things convenient for us. So let's find out what's possible, and let's find out what's convenient with Talking with Tech, starting in a few weeks here on the Speech Science Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I know what you're all thinking. The fame has gone to his head. He's had a facelift, and it's almost as bad as Simon's. The truth is that after winning the semi-final, I went to the bar to celebrate. People kept asking if I wanted another drink. By the time I typed no, they bought me one.
That's the last voice guy, courtesy of Britain's Got Talent and producer Simon Cowell. That avoids us on any version of copyright. You're listening to Speech Science. I'm Matt Hodd, Michelle Wintering, Michael McLeod. I play that because he won.
Woo!
Very cool. Very cool.
I also like his shirts. If our listeners get a chance to watch the longer clips of his performances, because the one he had on in this one said, what did it say, Matt?
I was disabled before it was popular.
Before it was popular. Like, he's the hipster disabled guy.
My favorite one is his, I'm in it for the parking.
Yeah,
with the handicap
parking. Yeah,
but no, this is great. Like, it's what we always want. We want our students, our caregivers, our parents, our kids, our patients to be able to laugh and laugh with, and not necessarily get and not at all be laughed at. And it's awesome to see somebody take control of the disability and flip the comedy on its head. If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. You're totally embracing embracing the differences. And he was brave enough to go on a television show, and of all shows, the kind of show where you can get, you know, eliminated. So that's pretty impressive. And not only that, obviously, you know, the speech pathologist in you is just so happy that this person's, you know, making headlines. You know, anytime you have someone like this who's being recognized and celebrated, it's great for everybody.
Yep,
he's really funny.
That helps too. So his first stand-up appearance, he started in 2012. Lee has performed in some of the United Kingdom's most popular comedy venues and solo shows, in Edinburgh, the Brighton Fringe, Glasgow Comedy, Leicester, Nottingham Comedy. Some of those, if you are a British theater nerd, they sound really familiar. And I am a theater nerd, so I'm like, wow, he played in Glasgow. Patrick Stewart played in Glasgow, but he will be at the Tyne Theatre on February 17th if you are over in the UK, which I know we have a couple listeners over there, so maybe you can go out and see Mr. Lee, the Lost Voice guy, Lee Ridley. Maybe you can go in there and get some tickets.
Yeah, let us know if you're going. Send us a message or a phone call, or can they text that number, Matt?
No, I don't think we got text. It's Google Voice. Well, I don't know. Try it. It'll come right to my cell phone.
I think you can text Google Voice numbers.
Michelle and Michael want somebody of the 13,000 listeners, someone to talk to them.
Someone has to know.
But I do like the fact that it is a age-restricted show that he has. So there you go.
All right. That's good to know.
Not for young ones.
Don't take your little ones.
Not for young ones. Oh, man. What is going on this week? Before we wrap it up and send it home, Michael, we'll start with you. What do we got going on this week?
Just really finalizing everything for the summer. Should be doing a good amount of, I'll be seeing Jurassic Park. I'll be doing that. But just getting everything together for the summer. Got some traveling going on, some more presentations, some more conferences. Meeting other speech therapists, doing some outreach.
Ooh, where are you going?
Maryland, back and forth to Maryland here and there. Where else? I don't know. Who knows?
Hey, well, if you make it to Ohio, let me know.
I will.
I'll get you some Skyline. Michelle, what are you doing this week?
Why are you just laugh right away?
I do. My wife would be mad at me if I don't ask you. Does it have an eviction notice yet?
I hope I'm having a baby this week. That's where I'm at right now. We might try to get to the Jurassic Park movie too, though.
Woo.
And on that note, I had told you guys I'll have to send you the video, but when I welcomed my husband back from his deployment, I definitely wore the 7-foot-tall dinosaur costume to pick him up at the airport. So it seems fitting. Maybe we need to go see the movie.
I want to know what was Ryan's reaction, or what was his reaction?
He almost walked right by because he didn't realize it was me until my neighbor was like, Michelle, turn around, because I was looking the wrong direction. So
that is true love, where he's like, that is not my wife. My wife wouldn't do that. Walk by. Oh, no, oh gosh.
Once that's he my wife. The dinosaur costume, he absolutely knew it was me.
I'm kind of with y'all. I'm doing a couple home visits this week and gearing up for the longest day of the summer is Thursday. So I'm going to a party up in Columbus for that one. And then I'm going to go see the Indoraptor himself with Jurassic World 4. And everyone that can't see that, I have a Indoraptor on the screen. And I guess you can't see it because it's a podcast. We need to get back to YouTube Live. We really do need to get back.
You had YouTube Live?
Yeah, we used to do this live every week, and we should get back to that. Maybe next week.
I don't know.
I remember that.
Yeah, they were good.
I never watched the video. I just
thanks,
listened.
Michelle.
I just listened.
I used to watch and comment. Now look at me.
Yeah, that's true. That's
you were amazing. The commenter. Now that's why we don't have anyone. Now.
Starting from the bottom.
Oh, let's send this puppy home. Oh, maybe not. Let's see. Oh, our intro. I forgot what I was doing. Our intro music is Please Listen Carefully by Jazar. It's licensed under an attribution and share alike license. Our closing music tonight is Calm the F Down by Broke for Free. It's also under a Creative Commons attribution license for Michael McLeod, Baby Speech Science, and Michelle Wintering. I'm Matt Hott saying, in the mortal words of Janice Wright, be a willow, don't be the oak, because under times of pressure, the willow will bend and come back and be just as strong as before. The oak will crack, and then no one will want it. See you later, everyone. Peace. All right, cool. Good episode, y'all.
Well done.
Sounds good to me.